Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. Our guest this episode, we've got Mike Schumer Jr., recent NWT champion on the Mississippi River, specifically Pool 3 and Pool 4 of the Mississippi River here a week or so ago. And Mike comes on to share his story, you know, his personal story and just how long he's been fishing tournaments down there and all of his experience. A great story. Mike himself is a great story. And then the story of the tournament. You know, just how it all went down. Just a super cool interview here with a great guy, and fun to get to know him. And obviously, you know, just so many takeaways. You know, just listening to somebody on a really high level talk about how they fished and won a big tournament. You know, just inevitably, I'm just, you know, taking notes and remembering all these things, and just the philosophy, the strategy. You know, a little bit of presentation, and then, you know, just listening to how Mike overcomes the anxiety of each day of tournament fishing and all the things that happened. And yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely, you know, with these tournament anglers of any level, but certainly the on the highest level, on the biggest stage of walleye fishing, the NWT, you know, when things don't go right until the last second, there's definitely a whole day, you know, hours worth of decision making. And what do you do to get it done? And those are the details of the story that are fun to talk about, and there's just the emotional roller coaster of it all. So anyways, let's get into it here. We've got recent NWT champion on the Mississippi River, Mike Schumer Jr. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations, and to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. North Dakota is truly home to some world-class fishing opportunities, and as anglers, it is our responsibility to help protect these world-class opportunities by following the aquatic nuisance species protocols here in the state of North Dakota. I'm talking about the Clean, Drain, Dry initiatives. It goes like this. At the end of the day of fishing, or whenever you decide to put your boat or pontoon or whatever you got on the water that day back on the trailer, it is your responsibility to head to the back and pull the plug, make sure the water's draining out of the live well, and walk around, make sure you don't got a bunch of weeds hanging off the trailer. Just clean it all up, take a look at everything, and drain the water out of everything before you hop in the vehicle and drive home. Don't assume that the person in the passenger seat did it for you. It is everybody's responsibility. There's no excuses and no exceptions. If you're unsure what these Clean, Drain, Dry protocols are, I'll put a link in the description of this podcast that'll take you to the North Dakota Game and Fish website, and it'll help give you all that information. Again, as anglers, it is our responsibility to know and understand these things and to execute them. And the reality is that so many, the vast majority of the fisheries here in North Dakota are unaffected still by aquatic nuisance species, which means, anglers, we've been doing a great job of cleaning and draining and drying our boats, and it is working. So let's continue to do a great job here in 2024's open water season. Started off, Mike, dude, I feel like I just don't know anything about you. I want to hear, you know, more about who you are, man. So maybe starting off with where you're from, where you were kind of born and raised or baptized into fishing, and just kind of what the origin story of your fishing career, you know, and where that all starts, man. If you can go back as far as you want, I like to hear those personal stories, man. Go ahead.
Yeah, I grew up Prescott, Wisconsin. I mean, I went to high school there. I went to college at the University of River Falls, and I've always had an interest in outdoors, fishing, hunting. I mean, even my current job right now, I'm working outdoors year round. So it's always been an interest, an outdoorsman. And like I said, grew up in Prescott, Wisconsin. I actually grew up outside of Prescott, between Prescott and Diamond Bluff, Wisconsin. And I know a lot of these anglers know Diamond Bluff because there was a lot of these guys launched out of Diamond Bluff for the tournament. And Diamond Bluff is directly across the river from Treasure Island, where the casino or where the tournament was held.
So that's your home turf.
That's my home turf. I grew up, pool three, I pretty much know it like the back of my hand. I'm out there as much as possible. And I started as a young age fishing. Muskie fishing was one of my big interests. My grandma had a cabin up on Bone Lake, did a lot of muskie fishing, pan fishing. And I guess I really didn't get into this walleye river fishing till I was probably about 22, 23. I remember I was still in college, and I ended up fishing a walleye tournament with my dad out of Pool 4. And it was a local tournament, but it was a big tournament. You got a lot of good sticks that live down there that get in all these local tournaments. And I remember it was a two-day tournament, and we came in the first day. We were tied for first place, and we had a heck of a weight. We had five saugers, almost 20 pounds with five saugers.
And, oh, man.
Yeah, and you don't, it's rare to see that nowadays on Pool 4. It's coming around, but, man, back in the early days, it wasn't uncommon to come in with four and a half pound saugers, a lot of them. So that was pretty much got me hooked in this tournament fishing. So it was mainly, me and my dad, me and my brother. Like I said, there's a lot of local tournaments every year on Pool 3, Pool 4, and we get into every one of them. The Minnesota Tournament Trail used to come down every spring for many years in a row, and we did pretty good in that circuit when they come around. We would only fish it when they came to the river. AIM, we've done fairly good in the AIM tournaments when they come around. And, right now, me and my dad are fishing the AIM River Series this year. And pretty much the only reason we are is because one of the tournaments is going to be out of Hastings, Minnesota on Pool 3. And the championship's going to be held on Pool 3 and 4. So we figured we'd jump in since that's a kind of our home body of water.
Oh, like with the tournament fishing though, like when you think about when you first started getting into tournaments and, maybe you got bit by that bug a little bit, what is it about tournaments? Like, what's your passion? What would you say is your motivation and drive to fish tournaments?
I think it's the competitive side of it. I was in sports in high school, and I was always competitive in sports, and I think that's the biggest thing is just the competitive side of it. And I don't know, I really enjoy it. I enjoy fishing, but the competitive side and, trying to be the best out there has kind of been the draw for me.
We're still kind of on your little bit of your fishing story, your career in fishing and getting into tournament fishing here. But, getting signed up for the NWT, have you ever fished any other NWTs?
I've never fished an NWT. I know before it was the NWT, it used to be, I believe, the FLW-RCL. I was in those, and that was, I don't know how many years ago that was, but those came around before the NWT was even, you never heard of the NWT.
Right.
And even I'm trying to think, but this NWT, I don't know how many years ago, but they had canceled two tournaments that were supposed to be on a Pool 4 because of high water in the spring of the year. So I was pretty pumped up and hoping to get in them when they came around, and both times they canceled, and finally this one stuck, and it was out of a Treasure Island Pool 3, and I thought, man, this is gonna be great.
Yeah, man. No, I like that. You're a competitive guy. You know, that really fits the bill. You know, I mean, just, you know, it doesn't matter how big or small the tournament is, you know, you're ready to go. I love hearing stories like that. I mean, we're talking about being on your home turf. You know, so that's always exciting in its own right, you know, and there can be a lot of give and take in that in tournament fishing. I mean, I have a lot of conversations with a lot of guys that, you know, don't even really have a home body of water, guys that just travel, you know, do the tournaments and they break down fresh water. They're just good at breaking down new water all the time. And sometimes being on your home turf can kind of be your Achilles heel for a lot of guys because you have too many memories or waypoints or whatever. I kind of want to get into all that with you, like, you know, what some of your confidences are like, and even just talking about this year specifically, maybe we kind of start there. When you got signed up for the tournament, you know, what have the conditions been like? You know, I mean, as far as like your pre-fishing or even just, you know, your pre-pre-fishing, fishing all spring long, I imagine you've been out there plenty before the tournament. Like, what's the river like this year? I kind of need a description. I don't get over there that much. So, you know, all the details of how the river sets up and kind of the patterns and what it's like to be on pool 4 or pool 3, you know, I'm just curious about the big picture of all that.
Right. Well, going into this tournament, you know, pool 3, I mean, it seems like pool 4 is always 2 weeks ahead of pool 3 when it comes to the spawn and fish showing up in certain areas. In pool 3, I mean, this year, early spring, we had pretty low water. We didn't have the high water like we usually do during the spawn. So it was a different spring. We didn't quite catch fish in the normal areas we usually do due to the water being low. But come this NWT, we had some high water, but the water was, I mean, I started my pre-fishing, the Friday before the tournament. So I had a full week of pre-fishing in. And at that time, the water was slowly coming back down. It had peaked, and it was starting to come back down. And I kind of, from looking at the prediction of what the water level was going to do, I kind of had it figured out where I was going to fish. I had some certain wing dams I know turn on when the conditions are right, and I was kind of banking on that. So the pre-fishing I was doing, I was checking a lot of spots, but I was still banking on a set of about 8 wing dams that were I knew were going to turn on come tournament time. So anyways, we figured out a few big fish spots on pool 4 because I kind of figured that might be where I'm going to have to go to get my bigger fish. I mean, the fish down there just seem bigger this time of year than up on pool 3. And I guess to jump ahead a little bit here, it's Tuesday, Tuesday before the tournament, and these set of wing dams I was banking on finally turned on. I think we fished 8 of them. We fished 8 of them that Tuesday morning, and we caught fish on 6 of the 8. We'd catch a fish, we'd get out of there, check another wing dam. I thought, man, they're going to turn on. Well, come Tuesday night, that area down there got anywhere from 3 to 5 inches of rain in that area, and it completely shut that bite down. The water came up some, and then I was kind of reeling. I mean, we did a lot of pre-fishing. We were catching fish in other spots, but Wednesday, we just went out and fished and figured out some other spots the fish were and basically went off that. My big fish spot down on pool 4 didn't really change with all that rain, but it changed a lot of it changed where these fish were staging up on these wing dams up on pool 3 with that added water coming up. I thought the clarity was going to really turned bad, but the clarity stayed pretty good throughout the tournament. That didn't seem to have an effect at all. But yeah, I mean, that was it. I had a plan going into the tournament to lock down in the pool four and get my big fish and maybe get lucky enough to get a couple unders down there, because I kind of had a little run I was going to do. I'd get my big fish, check fish a couple spots for unders. If I got them, I got them. If I didn't, I didn't. And then I was going to head up to pool three and work on getting them unders before the end of the day.
Getting into the tournament, like these are just some of those stories and so the details of the stories that I just really like. I take a lot away from it. Like, you know, what were some of the bigger decisions you feel like you had to make? I mean, you know, think about, you know, you talk about you had your game plan from pre-fish. You had your big fish spots. You had your unders. You know, you had a plan. But we all know in tournament fishing, you know, so often it doesn't ever go to plan. So you got plan B, you got plan C or whatever. I'm just curious, you know, how day one went for you.
Yep. Day one, it kind of went as planned. It got a little later than I wanted to. But day one, I mean, we locked down, got in the lock. I mean, I think they said there was 100 boats in that lock on day one. And we were all in there at the same time going down to pool four. And I'll tell you what, pretty much every one of them boats ran the Wisconsin back channel, because a lot of them were going down in the lake. And we were staying in the Wisconsin back channel. And it was something else to see all these boats coming out of the lock when they open up the gates. But we got to our spot and we had it to ourselves. There was a few other boats in the area. And this particular spot we were fishing, we were just using live bait, setting in one. I mean, it's basically a one boat spot. And it was, we're just fishing a deeper hole with some good current coming off. I was kind of coming off the bank, off the shoreline, and we were using, I was using sucker minnows for my live bait on a dork rig. And we were using a pretty heavy weight for the area. We were using an ounce and a half to stay down. I mean, with the current there. And, I mean, things kind of went as planned. We had a big catfish right off the bat that we caught there, thinking it was, it got us excited. And then it got to be 9 o'clock and I had a heck of a fish on. In this particular spot we were fishing, I mean, we were pulling 28 inch plus fish out of this spot pre-fishing, and it just seemed like you couldn't catch anything small there. They were all going to be big fish if you got one there. So the second bite was a big fish, and I had my sinker out of the water, and we still couldn't see the fish, and then the hook come flying out of the water. So we lost that one. And that was 9 o'clock. And 9:30, we had another bite. And this bite, I brought the fish. We never saw it, but I had it very close to the surface, and the chub come, or not the chub, but the sucker come flying out, and you could tell, I mean, all the walleye did, and it could have been a catfish, but I think it was a walleye, because I've seen walleyes do this before, where they'll clamp onto that minnow, just, you know, barely on it, and hold on to it to the last second, let it go. And that was 9:30. And it ended up being 10:30 before we finally netted a big fish there. And that big fish was, I never measured it, but it had to have been close to 29 inches, and I'm sure it was over 9 pounds.
I mean, obviously that was a no-brainer, but, you know, for you, did you sort of have a size in mind? Like what, you know, thinking about the kind of weight that you were shooting for, or, you know, look, you know, the caliber of fish that you were after, like, as far as the overs go, did you sort of have like a benchmark, you know, for the morning bite, or maybe at a certain point in time? I mean, there's a lot of factors into that decision, but for you, what was your standard on a keeper day one over?
I figured 27 inches or bigger. And, you know, the weird thing was, going into this tournament, when my pre-fishing started, I figured if I got a 25 and a half inch fat walleye, I was going to keep it. But after the pre-fishing we did and the size of these big fish we were catching, I thought, man, it's got to be at least 27 or bigger. And I knew this spot, if we could get one in and get one in the boat, I knew it was going to be a good fish that would really help us out.
I mean, what about a spot on the Mississippi River? Like what about a spot could be like that to produce big fish? Like I'm just curious, you know, how you would detail or sort of describe, you know, the area, the fish pattern. Like how can a spot be, you know, only good for big fish like that time of year?
You know, I don't know what it is. It's you find a few of them once in a while, and sometimes you might think they're few and far between, but I think there's a lot of spots out there on that river like this spot, and it's just a matter of finding them. I mean, it all depends on what the river's doing too. I mean, this particular spot, if the river would have dropped a couple more feet, them fish probably wouldn't have been there anymore. It's just, you know, these spots here that we fished, we've known them for a few years, but I know there's more spots out there real similar. It's just a matter of finding them and, you know, remembering them. And it was just basically a hole. A deeper hole that had a sharp ledge on it.
I just find it interesting. You know, there's sort of a different version of the same story everywhere you go. And it seems like tournament anglers really, really capture these stories better than anybody, I think, just because of the competitive nature of a tournament. But like, you know, so often everywhere you go, the big fish are doing something different than the little fish. And it just sounds like, I mean, it just sounds so crazy that you wouldn't, you know, with a sucker minnow, I mean, unless you're fishing with like 14 inch sucker minnows, it's amazing that you wouldn't catch, you know, in a good spot like that, that there wouldn't be a school of 19 inches in there. I mean, is there sort of a personality to the big fish down in that part of the world? Like how would you sort of describe that in your experience looking back on your whole career? Has it just always been like that? You're just looking for those types of spots that just hold those big fish?
You know, that's a lot of the tournaments are like that down there. You seem to find a big fish spot, and that's all you seem to catch in those certain areas are big fish. And like you said, yeah, why wouldn't you get a 22 or a 23 or a 19 incher right there?
Yeah.
It's just, you don't. And, you know, I did pick up while we were sitting there, you know, it got to be 9 o'clock, and you could tell at 9 o'clock, everything started, minnows were starting to pop out of the water. You could see fish, you could see active fish. And I did end up pitching a jig in plastic a little further down where it shallows up from this hole. And I did get two small saugers. So there are smaller fish in the area, but I don't know if they quite get in them holes like these bigger fish do. And I don't know if it's a little quicker current that keeps some smaller fish out of there or what. But,
or maybe they just getting eaten, you know? I mean, you think about a 9-pounder. Right. You know, or you think about just like sort of a, and do you feel like those fish, I mean, I don't, you know, do you have forward sonar? Is that something that you utilize in close quarters like that?
Yeah, I don't have any forward facing sonar, but it's just kind of the pattern. They're working their way. I mean, as the water drops, they seem to migrate a little further down closer to the lake, and these big fish still happen to be kind of on the upper end a little more. Granted, there was still a lot of big fish caught all the way down at the lower end of the lake. I mean, they're everywhere, it seems like, on that pool four.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that was kind of the other thing, you know, for me as a fan, like just observing, you know, just watching the live stream, watching the weights. Watch, you know, the talk before the tournament was whether or not you can find your over. It's almost like just looking at, you know, interviews and, you know, watching social media and seeing, you know, just people posting, you know, anglers posting, you know, I almost had the impression like maybe it was tough for people to catch an over, you know, but it seemed like after day one, the weigh-ins, it didn't seem like catching an over was necessarily that tough for everybody, but it was like, do you have the willpower to throw a 25 and a half inch fatty back for and wait for a 27? It just seemed like that was, or just get lucky and let, you know, have the big one be, you know, the first one that you get in the net. You know, it just seemed like there was just like all that luck involved, you know, for a lot of anglers. But anyways, I just find that stuff super interesting. So, you know, just kind of continuing on, and I'm definitely going to revisit some of these elements. I just want to get this tournament story out of the way though. But,
yep.
You know, talking about after day one, so what position were you sitting in, and what, if anything at all, had changed about, for the fishing for you going into day two?
Well, day one, I mean, to wrap it up, we ended up getting our unders up on three on day one, and our last under, I was putting stuff away in the boat, and I told my co-angler, we were on a wing dam up on pool three, and I told him, just keep casting that crankbait over that rock pile. And I was putting stuff away, and he ended up getting a 17, I think it was 17 and a half incher, and that was our fourth fish on the first day, and we were boogieing to get back in. And if we got that fourth fish, we probably wouldn't have been sitting where we were sitting going into day two.
Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty, roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations, and to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. North Dakota is truly home to some world-class fishing opportunities, and as anglers, it is our responsibility to help protect these world-class opportunities by following the aquatic nuisance species protocols here in the state of North Dakota. I'm talking about the Clean, Drain, Dry initiatives. It goes like this. At the end of the day of fishing, or whenever you decide to put your boat or pontoon or whatever you got on the water that day back on the trailer, it is your responsibility to head to the back and pull the plug, make sure the water's draining out of the live well, and walk around, make sure you don't got a bunch of weeds hanging off the trailer. Just clean it all up. Take a look at everything. And drain the water out of everything before you hop in the vehicle and drive home. Don't assume that the person in the passenger seat did it for you. It is everybody's responsibility. There's no excuses and no exceptions. If you're unsure what these Clean, Drain, Dry protocols are, I'll put a link in the description of this podcast that'll take you to the North Dakota Game and Fish website, and it'll help give you all that information. Again, as anglers, it is our responsibility to know and understand these things and to execute them. And the reality is that so many, the vast majority of the fisheries here in North Dakota are unaffected still by aquatic nuisance species, which means, anglers, we've been doing a great job of cleaning and draining and drying our boats, and it is working. So let's continue to do a great job here in 2024's open water season. Was that somewhat expected? Was getting the right unders kind of in your spots up on three, was that kind of a grind? I mean, you know, yeah, maybe I tried to push you through day one a little too fast. I'm curious about
that. Day one was a grind for me. I mean, we locked up there and it was noon, and I'm like, holy man, there's a lot of boats already heading towards TI. I'm like, man, there's that many boats already weighing in early. And when we locked up, all we had was our big fish. We ended up getting our three unders up there, and we didn't get it was close. I want to say it was 1:30 before we got our first under. So it was a grind for us up there. And like I said, we caught that last under with we basically had about 5 minutes left before we had to head in.
I mean, does all your past tournament experience allow you to just stay steady in those moments? I mean, you know, after you had that big over, that's obviously a big, that's a big boost. Everybody's jacked up in the boat, I imagine. But like, tell me about the emotions of day one and getting, you know, taking that right to the wire at any point in time. You know, did you feel yourself feeling any kind of way about the day, or were you just confidence to the last second?
I had it on the back of my mind, but I also had a lot of confidence because we were fishing spots that I know should kick out a fish, and we just kept moving around to these certain wing dams and rock piles that I knew I had a lot of confidence in them from over the years that we'd easily stumble across an under on one of them. And we did. We hit the wing dams that have produced for me for many years, and we got them unders, but it took us longer than expected on day one.
And you know, you're talking about fishing differently. You live bait in your spot, you know, for your overs, and you make a big move and you're fishing wing dams and you're casting cranks. You know, tell me a little bit about that, like being versatile on a river system, fishing a tournament. What makes you decide your presentation?
You know, up on pool three on the wing dams, I mean, usually these fish, if they're in front of the wing dams, they're waiting for something to swim by their face. They're active fish. And to me, I've always kind of realized on wing dam fishing, if you're not going to get bit within the first 10 minutes you set up on a wing dam, you might as well move to the next one. Because those fish, I mean, if there's an active one there, you're going to usually get bit if you can get that bait across their face. And for me, that style of fishing, I like to run and gun. I don't like to mess around with live bait a whole lot on wing dams unless I know there's big fish on them. I mean, I like to cast cranks and throw a jig in plastic and kind of a quick presentation. And if I get bit, I get bit. If not, I'll go to the next wing dam that I think I can get a fish on.
Sure.
So that's kind of what I went off of, and that's kind of what we did on day one, and even day two was kind of the same type of deal. And
so, yeah, what spot were you sitting in after day one?
Day one, I weighed, I believe it was 14.03, and I was in fifth place on day one.
Okay, so you're sitting in top five. You got to be feeling pretty good about that. Going into day two, what was your big assessment? From, you know, just like what were some of the things you were thinking of? What were some of the things that you were, you know, just putting in your head as confidence going into day two that you were going to tackle this and give yourself a chance to win? Like, I'm just curious, you know, before you went to bed, you know, after day one, you know, what were the big things rolling around in your head?
Day two, I had a lot of confidence. I knew I could exactly repeat the same thing I did on day one and probably come out with about the same exact weight. I knew the big fish spot was going to, I knew that wasn't going to change. The only thing on the back of my mind was going into day two, is someone going to be sitting on that spot? It was wide open on day one. In day two, that was on the back of my mind, but I thought, heck, I can repeat what I did on day one, I think. And I figured I can easily be in the top 10 with the same weight I caught on day one. So going into day two, it was kind of we had a pretty good rain shower before we were all in the lock again, probably just as many boats in the lock.
That just sounds wild. that's gnarly. I mean, just for somebody that's not used to doing any of that, you know, like just seeing all the videos and stuff that was posted during that. Anyways, not to cut you off, but I just, you know, I'm not from there. I think that is so crazy. And to imagine all those high dollar boats with all that stuff, you know, and everybody's just in there all packed in there, like a, you know, just like a pack of matches, you know, just, oh my gosh, that just sounds pretty wild.
And I seen, you know, I seen people's automatic bilge pumps kick in, and I seen water being pumped right into the next bolt they were hanging on to. Because we were all in there kind of side by side. So,
yeah.
But anyways, before we even locked down on day two, there was a barge in the lock. So there was an hour delay on getting down. And I ended up getting a 19 and a half incher before we even locked down on day two.
Okay. Like you just knew that you knew the schedule of the barge and the lock. So you gave yourself an hour to hit a couple of spots.
Well, I basically fished some memory spots where I was on the lower end of pool three. So I could see the lock and dam. I could see when the barge was going to come out of there. And
sure.
So I fished a spot where I knew when it was time to go down, and we ended up getting a 19 and a half waiting there to go down.
So that's got to get the juices flowing then.
Yeah. And that was a nice fish. I mean, it was a fat 19 and a half incher, and got that on a jig and plastic, just pitching a basic kind of rock pile, kind of wing dam style spot.
Nice. So then you get into the lock. I mean, was that a common thing? Was everybody like, everybody was just sitting outside of it. Everybody was pitching and fishing in eyesight. I mean, I got to imagine that there was just...
Yeah, there was a lot of boats in eyesight of that dam. But I seen there was quite a few other boats that took off to different areas. And I'm sure they... I mean, there's a marine traffic app. And you can kind of look at that to know when that barge is coming out. Or you can call the lock and dam and find out when it's going to be open. So I think basically a lot of guys knew before takeoff there was going to be about an hour delay.
Sure, sure.
And once they opened it up for us, I mean, they held it open till they couldn't see another boat coming. So they basically kept it open till everyone was in there.
Sure.
The whole field that wanted to lock down. But yeah, we got in there and got out of there and headed down to our spot. We caught our big fish day one, and there was a boat there. There was a boat there. So
really?
Yeah. So I decided to go try a different spot I know pretty well. And we tried that spot for an hour, and I thought, well, let's run back up, see if that boat's still there. And we got up there, that boat was gone, and another boat was in there, a different tournament boat.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
So I wasted another hour, and then that boat never left. And it got to be 11 a.m., and I told my co-angler, we got a 19-and-a-half incher. It's 11 a.m. I thought, we got to go. We got to lock, you know, back up and at least get three fish. We got to get three fish. We got to at least get, if it's three unders, it's three unders. But we got to get three fish. Because with the decent weight I had on day one, I had to at least come in with four.
And what was the problem down, you know, down there as far as the unders go? I mean, for you anyways, was there just not as many unders down there? Were they just less desirable? You know, no, I guess I just like hearing that.
We had a little run of them, a couple spots where we were getting some decent unders pre-fishing, but I didn't get them the day of the tournament. And I mean, one of the spots had a tournament boat on it for the most part. So we weren't able to really get into the right spot for casting.
Sure.
And even the water came up down there from that rain, and that kind of, I think that affected, you know, a couple of my other under spots as well. I didn't have the confidence on the unders down there like I did up on three, because we were getting pretty decent, consistent unders up on three pre-fishing.
So you locked up.
So yeah, 11 a.m. we locked back up. And I'm trying to think here about the time we ended up getting our second fish. I don't think it took too long. I think it was noon. We pulled into a spot where we caught a couple, one decent under on day one, and we got some decent 20, 21 inch fish on day one in this spot that were really close. I mean, a couple of the 20 inchers we caught were, they were barely over 20. So we pulled into that spot. We ended up getting another 19 and a half, and we got an 18 and a half. And both of them were, I mean, they were plump, fat fish. So there we are sitting with three decent unders. And it's about 1 o'clock, and we had our three decent unders. And I didn't have to be in until 3:40. And I knew from where we were, I knew another set of wing dams a little further above us towards Prescott Moore. I thought, well, let's go hit at least a couple of them. I know in years past they've been big fish wing dams, and we haven't really caught a big fish on them in a year or two. But going off past history, we knew there was, we knew we've pulled big fish off of them before.
Okay.
So yeah, 1 o'clock, we get up to the next set of wing dams, and the guy that ended up in second place was in the same area, fishing the kind of the same set of wing dams. The only reason I knew it was the second place guy was because the camera boat was hanging around with him.
Oh, sure.
So I thought, well, man, maybe these wing dams are going. And we caught fish there pre-fishing, and we tried one of them. And we didn't get anything there. We caught a couple smallmouth bass, decent smallmouth bass. And then 1:30, we pulled up to the top set of wing dams there. And I, when I first set up on it, I set up way on the inside of the wing dam because the current, pre-fishing there, the current seemed too quick on the outside of it. And I pulled up and I pitched out a jig to the inside, and then I pitched one out to the outside. I'm like, man, this current seems a little different here. I don't know if it was the wind blowing into the wing dam that was really slowing the current down in front of this, the face of this wing dam, but I thought, man, this looks really good. So I kind of shifted the boat out to the, I was probably out 3/4 of the way from the shoreline out on this wing dam, and I threw a red-tailed chub on, and I don't think my sinker barely hit bottom, and I had a really good whap. And I let the fish take it for a little bit, set the hook, and I knew right away, man, this is a good fish. And we netted that one. It was 27 inches, and I bet he was pushing 8 pounds, maybe over 8 pounds. Man. He was a big fat one. And me and my co-angler, we were some high fives there, because I kind of knew with that one we were sitting really good. When I thought, man, I think I got the same weight as yesterday, if not a little better.
Getting back to like that, you know, the emotions, trying to decide what to do, the whole time management conversation, but it's really an emotional one. It's tough to be sitting in the top five and you know, be telling yourself, well, you know what, you know, even if we got to fill a card with some unders, we just got to do it. Like in those moments when you're doing that, I mean, where does your confidence go when you got to make a pivot like that and fish, you know, somewhere that you haven't caught, you know, it's a big fish spot. I like the way you describe it. You've caught big fish there before, but it's been a year since you've caught, you know, like a legit big fish, you know, so when you pull into that spot, you know, I mean, at that point in time, like, where's your confidence? Where's your head at? I mean, do you still feel like you were just totally steady? You know, you're just on your program, kind of on your grind because you got so much experience there? Or was there some nerves? What were some of the things you were thinking about?
Oh, I was pretty stressed. I mean, when we went up and got our two unders, and they were decent unders, I told my co-angler, man, because we sat there for a little bit longer after we got them decent unders, I thought, wow, if we get one in here that's 24, 25 inches, I said, we're going to keep it. we're going to keep it. And we didn't, and I still had those other set of wing dams on the back of my mind. I wanted to go up there. So we went up there, and I mean, I had confidence, and I also had a mind that was a roller coaster.
Yeah.
You know, it was back and forth, you know. God, if we get another one, do we keep it? Well, luckily we didn't get another one that was an over, a decent over.
Right. I mean, that's just like part of those stories that, you know, unless you're in the boat, you know, present during those conversations or those thoughts that are going through your head, if you don't like remember them that way, it's like very few people would understand that, you know, to win a big tournament, win any tournament, any derby between you and your five buddies, you know, to some extent, there's those little things of luck that kind of make it meant to be. I feel like I've had enough of these conversations, and I like that. I like it when it's meant to be, those little things. Cause I mean, yeah, what happens when you catch a 23 incher and it just, you know, once it's in your hands, and you know, that decision where am I going to throw this thing back in the water seriously, or, you know, given the circumstances, do I want to cash the best check that I possibly can, you know, being it's day two, it is what it is. And you're, right. You know, your plan is a little foiled. I mean, man, nobody knows what they would do in that scenario until they're in that scenario. And for you to be able to pull the plug, you know, and who knows, maybe you stay five more minutes in that spot and you catch that, you know, 24 inch over and you tell yourself you got to keep it. Your whole life is different.
Exactly. You know,
everything's different.
Exactly.
But when it's meant to be, man, that is just when it is so special and it's on your home body of water. How would you describe that? I mean, you know, now you get that last over. Were you thinking you had a chance to win when you're going through weigh-ins? I mean, at what point in time did it hit you that you really had a chance to win?
Yeah, when we netted that fish, I thought, man, I'm going to be right there. I'm going to be first, second, or third. Because I figured, well, man, I got the same exact weight, if not better, than the first day.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, you come in with a weight like that 2 days in a row, you're usually sitting pretty dang good.
I mean, you didn't wait till last to weigh in, did you? I mean,
no.
You know, talk about the weigh in and when it's all like actually going down. I mean, how would you sort of articulate that whole experience and what it all means to you when you wrap it all up in a package like that, when you wrap it all up in a bowl? You know, we're sitting here now having this conversation after the fact. So, you know, that big cardboard check is at your house. So, you know, how would you kind of wrap it up? You know, would you encapsulate, you know, what you think about when you signed up for it? You know, you had the intentions of doing good, you know, having the intentions of fishing to win it, looking at how it all went down. You know, how much of your experience and knowing where to fish and just how to react to the conditions really played a factor and then to win it, I mean, on your home turf, man, like how would you wrap that all up in a package?
I would wrap it up saying all the years of fishing down there and the hours I put in, it really paid off this time. I felt really good. It's like, man, I've had a lot of experience down there fishing, and this one meant the world to me. I mean, me and my dad and my brother, and I had a few friends over the years. I have one great friend that passed away, and this was great.
Absolutely. Yeah. Is there anything better than just winning it, you know, where you've fished forever, you know, where you were baptized into fishing? You know, I mean, I just can't imagine that there could be anything better. I imagine weigh-in was a bit of a party for you. You probably had a few people able to show up. Maybe the neighborhood. Did everybody in the neighborhood know you were fishing this?
Yep, there was quite a few that showed up. Yep,
that's awesome. That's good, man. That's awesome. I just think about these stories. You know, I like being able to record these things because they just, then we can just make sure they live longer. You know, I mean, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 40 years from now, you know, just, this is technology, man. I mean, the digital age, you know, this podcast will be able to live forever and to hear the story, or if somebody ever wants to, you know, call you a liar about this story, we can, you know, 20 years from now, we can go back and listen to it. Just hear your voice tell the real story right after it happened.
Yep.
You know, I think it's, you know, just as a fan of tournament fishing, I'm always listening to the information and the stories, because it's entertaining, but it's also, you know, it's inspiring too, but it's also, I can learn from it. Even on my home body of water, I'm always just looking for little tips and tricks, you know, that I can just sort of, you know, insert into my own arsenal to just make me a little bit better. You know, and I just think about, you know, you breaking down those big fish spots and just realizing that, you know, these big fish do things differently than the little fish. You're looking for a spot, and sometimes you're looking for a spot that's only big enough for one boat to be in, and which probably is good because they're a little bit harder to find if they're smaller. Big fish spots that are big probably attract a lot of boats and a lot of pressure. You know, I don't want to assume too much, but that just, you know, I like the idea. You know, I just think about that in my own fishing, where, you know, I just feel like there's a lot of days where that's what I'm trying to do on my own home body of water. I'm trying to emulate, you know, what you guys do in these tournaments, you know, even if it's somewhere far away from me. I'm just, you know, these stories just inspire me to go find big fish on my own water. And I'm always trying to push myself outside my own comfort zone of getting away from small fish to find bigger fish if I can. And it, you know, there's a lot of trial and error with that, but when I hear that you guys do, you know, when I hear, you know, people finishing at the top of an NWT tournament, and that's a big part of their story, you know, like that's, you know, that's so, that just motivates me a ton. But then the fun tournament stories, you know, the fun, like, emotional roller coasters of, like, even day one, you know, day two probably had its own set of stress for you, but day one, you fished right down to the wire. So you just never got to breathe clean air.
I was never comfortable until 1:30 the second day.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, I mean, and maybe that's the way it should be. That's the way you should win. You know, I mean, if it was easy, everybody would do it. If you had your winning fish every day by 10 o'clock, I mean, you know, that's all fine and dandy. But you know what? Like, did you really earn it, or were you just that lucky? But when you can grind them out and make every decision possible, fish your spots and just squeeze them for every last ounce of potential that they had in every second, having your co-angler just make that same cast over and over a rock pile, and just, you know, trying to exude your own confidence into that co-angler who's probably a stranger, or just, you know, somebody that you never fished with before, and just, you know, just tell them, keep making that cast and it'll happen. And with minutes left to go, you know, like, it happens. Like, you know, I don't know, man. I'm a one last cast kind of guy. It doesn't even have to be a tournament for me to fish with anxiety at the end of a fishing day going, man, I just want to get one more bite. You know what I mean?
Right.
And, you know, that, like, never goes away. And, yeah, man, I don't know. Like, I just find these stories, you know, it's, I've never experienced it on that level, so I can't relate to that. But in my own way, I feel like I can. If in my own way, I can sort of interpret it for myself and just really kind of, you know, yeah. So anyways, I just, you know, really, really appreciate the stories, Mike, for sure. I would say, is there anything, you know, I guess, like I was saying, the tips and tricks, if we were going to have a closer and just spend like a couple of, like, 2 minutes on a closer, if somebody was planning on going down, to the Mississippi River Pool 3 and Pool 4 for the first time in their lives, you know, maybe somebody with some fishing experience somewhere else, but like, if somebody's going to go fish Pool 3, Pool 4 this time of year, like what kind of advice, recommendations, whether it's gear recommendations, some strategy, you know, just, the gear that they got to have to be prepared for it all? Like what would be like a 2 or 3 minute fishing tip or of any kind? What's the first thing that comes to mind if I was going to get some advice from you to go down there and fish?
Man, the first thing that comes to mind, especially this time of year going into June, would be trolling down on Lake Pepin, trolling crankbaits. And that's, either on lead core or on braided line. And, you know, that'd be my tip for this time of year. I mean, that bite on Lake Pepin is going really good right now, and it'll go good till the 4th of July.
Get your crank game dialed if you want to head there this time of year, man. I like that. Well, Mike, I love the stories, man. We can sign this off. Their timing is really good. I could definitely sit here and pick your brain about the Mississippi River for the next like 9 hours, honestly, with all the experience that you have there. I just love it. But man, it's definitely getting to know you, getting to know how long you've been fishing tournaments, just in your own life. I mean, this is definitely no accident. This is many, many years in the making for you. I'm sure just so many fishing buddies, so many days on the water with so many people that helped you get to this point. But yeah, dude, like just totally congrats on the W. It's awesome that you had some time for me. And I would say this, if you're willing, throw something out there. If people ever had questions or wanted to follow along on any of your fishing exploits, I don't know if you got your social medias or any way anybody could get a hold of you or anything that you wanted to promote whatsoever here at the end, man, I would just say go for it if you want.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone can reach out to me on Facebook Messenger with any questions, otherwise that's about all I got.
Right on, man. And that's Mike Schumer.
Correct, yep.
The last name, S-C-H-O-M-M-E-R.
And that's Junior, Mike Schumer Jr.
Well, dude, Mike, I appreciate the time. Like I said already a few times, I really, truly do, genuinely. I love the stories. I love all these interviews. I take tons away from it. And for you, just what a great story, man. Well-deserved. So many hours on the water, on that body of water. To learn it, to know how to survive the stress and anxiety